No way.
Okay. So, again, so the agenda for today is, well, I'll briefly review what metamonoids are because it's been a week, and then I'll tell you, several applications. So basically, an invariant which is well behaved with respect to these metamonoid operations will be able to say something, at least potentially, about links and three manifolds and genus and ribbon knots and several other things which are probably less valuable. And then I will tell you a little bit about the sort of model case. So the one invariant that has all of these properties, and this is gamma calculus, and it's on your handout. So you have a handout with gamma calculus on it. First I want to review what we did last time. So for that, let me go to the video from last time and then click on the first blackboard shot and then go over the blackboard shots one by one, just quickly. And you have it at the back of your handout, and you can read it, basically the first column and then the second column, okay? So these are only quick reminders, okay? So first of all, we define tangles, and I remind you that TU of S, so usual tangling of a set S, is the collection of things like that in the plane. Component must be oriented and with bijection, in a bijection with the elements of S, and no components are allowed, and of course we mod out by Rademeister 1, 2, and 3, though Rademeister 1 is often dropped. Okay? Then we said, okay, there are a few operations. So there is a disjoint union operation where you put two tangles side by side. Last time I said more details, I gave more details, but it's not terribly important. There is a stitching operation. So if you have a tangle with two strands labeled X and Y, there is the stitching operation MXYZ, which stitches X and Y, creating a new strand called Z, and it just acts by, you connect the head of X to the tail of Y. So these are all reminders, and if you need, if you need to ask me anything, then do so, okay? And then there is a strand deletion, which is not terribly important, and strand renaming, which has to be there for structural reasons, but it's not, again, it's not terribly important. And the claim is that with these operations, the set of tangles is finitely generated and, in fact, finitely presented. So if you ever find an invariant which respects these operations, it's enough to define it on the generators, which are the overcrossing and the undercrossing, okay? And that's what we will do later on. I should have said these operations have some properties, and the most fun of those, and the only one I really care about, is this meta-associativity. So it's basically, if you have three strands, then stitching X to Y and then Y to Z is the same as stitching Y to Z and then the result to X. So it's written as this composition, and then anything which has these operations and which satisfies these axioms is what I will call a metamonoid. Then last time I gave a number of examples. So if G is a group, or in fact a monoid, then S goes to G to the S is a metamonoid. Likewise, if A is an algebra, then S goes to A to the tensor power S is a metamonoid. And then I gave a number of, then we had an example of K S by S matrices, and in fact we had an invariant with values in this example, and that was the linking number. And then we had an amusing example, which I'm only reminding you of its existence. I'm not going to say anything about it, but it's some sort of metamonoid of groups, whose elements, in fact that was in the previous slide, whose elements were triples, a group, and then two sequences of elements in that group. And there was a metamonoid morphism from frame tangles into this metamonoid of groups, whose sort of most interesting component was mapping every tangle to the fundamental group of its complement. And in fact, the fact that the metamonoid of tangles is finitely generated implies that you can compute the fundamental group of any tangle using what we know about the metamonoid structure of pi and the fundamental group of the overcrossing and the undercrossing, and both of these are free groups. So basically, you know, there is a hidden here, and hidden in these operations is an algorithm how to compute fundamental groups of knots. Okay. What else did we have? Okay, so then I said we also had, in the case of tangles, we had some further operations. We had strand removal and strand doubling. So, sorry, strand reversal and strand doubling. And strand doubling takes a strand X and replaces it by two copies, Y and Z. And strand reversal just reverses the direction of a single strand. And then there are again a bunch of properties, and at the moment it's not important that I review them. Okay? But anything satisfying having all of these operations and satisfying all of these properties is a Meta-Hopf algebra, and most of the examples that I gave were Meta-Hopf algebras, but not all. So, next. And then came the meta-claim that I want to really justify now. So, basically the claim is that a lot of knot theory is expressible in these terms, and therefore will benefit from an invariant that respects these things, so from metamonoid morphisms into some algebraic set. And in particular, these are links, three manifold, genus, ribbon knots, and unknotting numbers, and I want to tell you a little bit about each of them. Okay? So basically, I want to tell you why, if you understand tangles and the operations I just mentioned, you can express with them all of these objects. Links, three manifolds, the genus of a knot, ribbon knots, and unknotting numbers. So, okay. So first of all, let's talk about links, or even more generally, closed components. First of all, a link, okay, a knot, you know what it is, and knots we already know how to treat, because knots are equivalent. I mean, if you have a knot, you can always cut it open at one place, and it's really a tangle with just two ends. An incoming end and an outgoing end, and since we will be treating all tangles, we will be treating knots. However, we still don't know how to treat links. So a link is a knot with two components, and here it is not well defined where to cut open. Basically, you can send one point to infinity in a natural, in a canonical way, but not two points. So, how do we treat links? Or in general, how do we treat tangles that may have some closed components and possibly also some non-closed components, so tangles like this one. Okay? So here is a theorem. So theorem, maybe I should say something about the manner by which I will treat all of those subjects. In all of those subjects, link three manifolds genus, there are theorems, and the theorems have an easy side and a hard side. The easy side convinces you that we're in a business, okay, that the concepts I'm mentioning make sense, and the hard side I will not do. Okay? So I will do only the easy side of each of the next few theorems. Well, maybe I will do one hard side or so. Okay? But anyway, here is the theorem. So I claim that the tangling of, some skeleton, and I don't care what it is, I'm writing it just so that you realize that I'm not talking about a single component, but possibly more. So the tangling of some skeleton, which I don't care about, and one closed component labeled C. So strictly speaking, and in fact, maybe I should say, I will not even indicate in which type of tangling. So strictly speaking, I've never defined this. But the definition should be clear. I'm talking about tangles that have open components labeled S and one closed component labeled C. And in fact, later I will not mind if in within S there will be also some further labeled closed components, okay? So the claim is that this is equal to, maybe I'll write it this way. There is a map into here from tangles with skeleton S and one closed component, okay? Sorry, and one extra open component labeled C. And that map is completely obvious. So if you have a tangle and it has one open component labeled C, and let me pretend that the tail of C is near the head of C. Well, in this case, they're topologically near. I drew them on opposite side of the tangle, but there is nothing in between. So all other things are here. And as I said, at the moment this looks like a restriction, but later it will become a non-issue. Okay? But strictly speaking, It's just a partially defined map. It's defined only for tangles which are written in this way. Okay? Anyway, for such tangles, you cannot always connect the head of C to the tail of C, and then you get a closed component. This is closed component. This is well defined, and I will call this map the trace, this will be the trace along the component C. So closing it up. Okay? So far there is no theorem. So far it's a definition and it's completely obvious. Okay? But I claim that we understand the kernel of this map. Okay? So, or more precisely, the equivalence relation. So these are sets, not vector spaces. So we understand the equivalence relation that this map induces on the domain, okay? And maybe I should explain what it is. So suppose you had a picture like this. So suppose you had a tangle with two components, A and B, okay? again, oriented this way, but this will not matter later on, then I can do two things to it. I can connect stitch, meaning A to B. So I can stitch A to B, or I can stitch B to A. So I can stitch them in either order. And in both cases, if I call the result C, and then I apply the trace of C along component C, so in both cases, the picture I will get will look like this, and that's a single closed component. Okay. Now, I didn't say, so I mean, this so far it looks unknotted, but sort of my convention is that within the box, I can have knottedness. So I mean, this closed component could be traveling through the rest of the tangle, well, in the same way in all the pictures. So I mean, so, but still, you'd get the same answer by stitching here and then tracing, well, stitching in one way and then tracing, or stitching the other way and then tracing. So in the kernel of this map, or in the equivalence relation generated by this map, is the following. So for every tangle inside the tangling of the original skeleton S, but now two extra components, one labeled A, one labeled B, and of course by this I mean that A and B were not part of S, okay, they're just dummy variables. You use different names if the names A and B are already in S. So for every such tangle, stitching A to B, calling the result C, and applying this to the tangle T, so this is equivalent to M BA, calling the result C, and applying this to T. Okay? So, again, for any tangle here, these two will have the same closure. So if you mod out by this equivalence relation, then the map trace sub C is still well defined. That was the easy side of the theorem. The hard side of the theorem is that this is an if and only if. So the hard side is that this is an equivalence relation. It's not very hard, okay? So, I mean, this is not too hard, but I don't want to go through it. It's just, I prefer to move forward, okay? But this means, okay? But this means that you could define closed components in terms of the right-hand side. If I had full understanding of the right hand side, I would be able to talk about closed components. It also means, okay, so right, so if so in other words, if I know tangles and I know how to stitch, I also know links. Okay. Likewise, okay, so this definition here, since it is stated in the language of metamonoids, makes sense for an arbitrary metamonoid. Okay, so take the metamonoid of groups. It makes sense to talk about groups with, or groups that correspond to a link or a tangle with one closed component, and you would define it by exactly the same formula, and then you would have a little theorem to prove that the metamonoid morphism, which maps every tangle to the fundamental group of its complement,
well, it's not even a theorem, it's automatic that it descends to a morphism into that it descends to this quotient, provided you model the image by the same thing. And then the thing to show is that you will still get the fundamental group of the complement of the link. So that's this way you will be able to talk about fundamental complements of links, okay? So basically, or the significance of this is that whenever you have a metamonoid morphism, so a well-behaved invariant of tangles, you automatically get a well-behaved invariant of links by modding out the target space by these relations, but by this equivalence relation, written in the metamonoid of the target space. Now, sometimes when you mod out by these relations, you'll get something trivial. Sometimes you will not get anything. You will lose all information. But at least in principle, you get an invariant. Okay? It might end up being the trivial invariant. Okay. Maybe one more thing. So, a sort of trace sub C is a meta trace. What do I mean by that? Well, it obviously satisfies, by definition, it satisfies, so stitching AB, calling the result C, and then applying a trace sub C is equal to stitching B and A, calling the result C, and then applying trace sub C. And that's very close to the defining property of traces. So M is a bit like multiplication. It had a meta-associativity property. It behaves in like multiplication. So trace behaves like a trace, because right, multiplying A and B is, and then taking the trace is the same as multiplying B and A and then taking the trace. And this is the analog of trace of AB is equal to trace of BA, hence the name. Okay? Good. Okay. So, again, so we automatically get invariants of links. Okay. Next. So, I claim that three manifolds can be defined in this language, and therefore we automatically get invariants of three manifolds. Again, in specific cases we might get the trivial invariant, but nevertheless we automatically get an invariant of three manifolds. So this starts from the following thing. So this is so-called Kirby's theorem or Kirby's calculus, and Kirby's calculus is the statement that if you look at, well, I want to write here all three manifolds, but really I have to be more specific. So compact, connected, orientable, three manifolds with no boundary. So that's basically the interesting three manifolds. So the claim is that this is equal to something which is describable in terms of links. And as links are describable in terms of tangles, it's also describable in terms of tangles. Okay? So, let me first write it this way. There is a map from links into it, and then I'll describe the kernel. So, the claim is that there is a map from framed links
in R3 into three manifolds. And what should we call the map? Well, it's the so-called surgery map. We should use S, but S was already taken, so we should use sigma, but sigma is already taken. So
capital sigma.
Capital sigma. Okay, let's call it sigma. Fine. Have you seen surgery before?
No.
Have you? Okay. Well, anyway, so let me define sigma. Okay? It's actually very easy and very cute and very lovely. So, okay, where should we do it? I guess here. So, okay, so let's do it first in the case of a single component, and then for many components you just iterate. Oh, by the way, I should have said sort of here this iterates, right? I told you how to add a single closed component, but of course, you know, now that I've added one single closed component, I can consider it as a part of the skeleton and iterate it, and then have arbitrarily many closed components. Right. So, what is surgery? So, if you have, a knot inside, well, you can view, well, really, everything makes sense inside a manifold. So, if you have a knot K, which is inside some manifold M, I'm going to tell you how to create M sub K, which is the surgery over M over K on M. So a plan, okay? And what this is the following. So, well, it's a bit hard to draw because it's impossible to draw other manifolds. I mean, we can't even draw R3, right? But really, it's the following. So you take M, you subtract from it a tubular neighborhood of K. So now it has K missing, but not only K is missing, but the whole a tube around K is missing. So now the result has a torus boundary, right? Namely, the boundary of this neighborhood, and it looks like a torus. So the result has a torus boundary. And then you have to observe that the two-dimensional torus, well, the two-dimensional torus is the boundary of what does the two-dimensional torus look like? It's the boundary of a two-dimensional disk which you spin around, so which you multiply by S1. So it's the boundary of D2 cross S1. But it's also the boundary of S1 cross D2. And so you remove a D2 cross S1 and you glue along the same boundary an S1 cross D2. So now you glue an S1 cross D2. Okay? What does it really mean? Okay, or what does it... Possibly you will see what it means once I'll tell you what's in the kernel. Okay? But, but what it really means is, so if you if that was the knot, let's do it in the case of the unknot, okay? If that was the knot, then removing a neighborhood of
of it means that you have a hole in your space which looks like whose boundary is a torus. And now, well, if I wanted to recreate the space, I would glue a disk this way, but I will glue S1 many of those. So I will glue a disk like that I'll glue S1 many such disks. But instead, I'm gluing the disks that correspond to the sort of other circle in a torus. So in other words, instead of gluing these disks, I glue disks that look like this. But of course, I glue them in outer space, right? I don't place them in S3 with the boundary like that. I glue them abstractly. They're not inside R3. I just glue their edges to my space. So in other words, instead of gluing this disk, I glue sort of disks that look like this. And again, I need to use S1 many of those because, I have this disk, but I also have, the bigger one. I have one such disk for each point along a meridian cycle. Okay? So, as stated, this is not well defined, and the reason is that there is no canonical identification of the torus there is no canonical identification of a tabular neighborhood of a knot with a torus. Okay? But the moment you have a framed knot, then you do have a canonical identification. But in fact, I don't even need to tell you how to make this canonical identification. It's enough that I tell you, if I have a framed knot, how do I glue these cups? Well, if you have a framed knot, then the framing defines a parallel, and then you glue these cups to the parallel. Right? You remove a neighborhood of the knot, the parallel to the knot becomes a curve in the torus. And then you glue a cup to this curve. But not only to this curve, but also to all things that you get by rotating the framing between 0 and 2 pi. Okay, is the picture clear? Okay, so let me tell you about the kernel of sigma. So there are two relations in the kernel of sigma. The first a Kirby move and the second Kirby move. And it's actually the second Kirby move that's easier to describe, that's easier to understand. Oh, sorry, I should have said, I described what to do in the case of a link, of a knot, but you can do the same for links. So basically, on each component, you remove a tabular neighborhood and glue it back in, and glue these cups back in. Okay? So, the second Kirby move says that doing surgery on a two-component link that looks like this is equivalent to... So, okay, first of all, what do I mean by look like this? What I mean is I only care about what happens here. Okay? So the two components come close to each other within this square, and over there they look like that, they are parallel. Okay? The rest can be knotted in an arbitrary way. So there could be a mess here, and this could be connected with that, or messed with, linked with that. I'm just not bothering to draw it. Okay? So doing surgery on this is the same as doing surgery on
the following thing. So what do I mean? Or why is it true? So once I do surgery on the first component, then I'm gluing cups sort of parallel to this component. So if something comes near the edge of one of these cups, I can slide it to along the cup. So right, if some, well, saying that I've glued a cup means that if a curve runs parallel to the knot, I can slide it through the cup and it runs like this now. Okay? So basically, I could slide the second component across the cup that I've used to cover the first component, and then I'll get this picture. And then surgery on this picture is the same as surgery on that picture. Or the moment, in fact, the proper statement is if I do surgery on just this component, I get a 3-manifold with a knot in it. And that pair, 3-manifold knot, is equivalent to the pair 3-manifold knot that you would get by doing surgery on the X component here. Because doing surgery on the X component means that you can slide things across it. But then after doing, so since the pair manifold with component Y in it is equivalent to the pair manifold with component Y in it, then also doing surgery on them on the Y component is equivalent. So doing surgery on this link is equivalent to doing surgery on that link. Okay? And again, these could be noted. What I really meant is, you know, so for example, doing surgery on a pair of trefoils is equivalent to doing surgery on the links that you get by letting one of the trefoils trace along the other. Okay? So that's the second Kirby move. And the first Kirby move, it's not really a, well, the first Kirby move just says that if you have an unknot but with framing 1, or in fact with framing plus or minus 1, then doing surgery on it is equivalent to doing surgery, to not doing surgery. So basically doing surgery on a knot with framing plus or minus 1, on an unknot. So this picture was schematic, but this picture is precise. So here I really mean unknot. So doing surgery on a plus minus 1 unknot is like doing nothing. So this is a bit harder to visualize, actually, so I will not bother, but it's true. Okay. And then the hard part of Kirby's theorem, okay, so what I've told you is that the surgery map descends. The hard part is that it's an equivalence. Okay? Anyway, so what does it mean? So I can write this in our language. Namely, the second move, so the first move is just modding out by some constants, but the second move is really the following. You double the X component, so you make 2 copies of it, and then you stitch the Y component to one of the 2 copies. So really this relation is if you take a tangle T, so take some tangle T whose closure will be this. So in other words, If you take a tangle T, oh, I think in my notes I called it A and B, so let's call this A and B, it doesn't really matter, maybe I should have left it X and Y. So take a tangle T and apply to it trace of A and trace of B, then this is equivalent to taking the tangle T, doubling component A, so you double component A and call the results A and a temporary name, let's call it A prime. Now take this and stitch A prime to B, calling the result the new B. Okay? And finally, do the same closures as before. So trace A and trace B. So again, since this was written in the language of metamonoids, it makes sense in an arbitrary metamonoid. So in an arbitrary metamonoid, sorry, not metamonoid, a meta-Hopf algebra. In an arbitrary meta-Hopf algebra, I can mod out by this relation, and therefore I would get, well, sort of three manifolds in that Hopf algebra, meta-Hopf algebra, or more precisely, I would get a space into which three manifolds will map. So a target space for three manifold invariants. And again, that target space might be trivial, but also might not be. Okay? So I actually never checked it in detail, but I assume, and it's worth checking, it's worth writing down in detail. If you want to do it, you're welcome. But I assume that if you will apply this procedure to the fundamental group invariant, you will get the fundamental group of the three manifold. I just don't see how it could be anything else. Also, if you apply this procedure to the linking matrix invariant, so at some point we talked about a metamonoid of linking numbers, so you will get what you can get on three manifolds from linking numbers, and that turns out to be the first homology of the three manifold. So I'm expecting that if you apply this procedure to the linking matrix invariant, you will get the first homology of the three manifold. But again, I have not verified it. I don't know it for a fact. I only expect it. Okay? Any questions or comments? That's a bit abstract, so I'm... Okay. So I need a break. So let's stop and meet again at 12:30.